From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jackie Leiden in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Police-community tensions have dominated many a news cycle since the summer in Ferguson, seemingly reaching a tipping point after Saturday's brazen execution of two police officers in Brooklyn. It's led to new twists in the conversation from New York to San Diego. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio is now at odds with his own 50,000 men and women in blue. This hour on Point, protests, race, and now two dead officers, and where we go from here. You can join us on air or online. What is your reaction to what happened in New York? What is the message from the mayor, from his police department, from the streets? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. And joining us now from New York is member station WNYC reporter Robert Lewis. Welcome to On Point, Robert.
Thanks for having me, Jackie.
So would you please just recap where we are now, what happened yesterday with the mayor's press conference, and what will be going on today?
Well, the big news out of yesterday was the mayor called for a halt to the protests, a halt to the demonstrations, which have really been going on for weeks, ever since the grand jury decision not to indict in the Eric Garner case. He says he has his office has reached out to protesters, the organizers, and said hold off at least until the funerals. Although it's worth noting, I got a notification late last night that some protests are going to still move forward. So those are allegedly scheduled for later today, and it's going to be interesting to see how those go off.
Okay. Let's just remind people, Robert, that the grand jury decided not to indict the officer in the Eric Garner case. And here is what Mayor de Blasio said yesterday about putting aside the protests.
All I can say is this is a time for every New Yorker to think about these families, to put aside protests, put aside demonstrations. Until these funerals are passed, let's focus just on these families and what they have lost.
And you say that you've already received word that in some quarters there will be some sort of gathering, protest, something?
Yes, exactly. The protesters sent out a notice basically saying they're not going to be asking permission to protest. It's unclear how big of a protest this will actually be. It looks like it's scheduled for this evening. They're calling for shutting down Fifth Ave. Again, it's very unclear how many people they'll actually be able to get out, but that is scheduled for later today.
Tell us also the other thing that is, of course, emanating from the outcry in New York is the story of the tensions between the mayor and the police department.
Well, the tensions were pretty high even before the killings. The Patrolmen's Benevolent Association president had basically said that the mayor does not support the police. It should be noted that this all comes as that union is working without a contract. When the killings actually happened Saturday night, I was at the hospital, and the union president just gave this fiery little speech to reporters where he said they'd been warning that people were going to incite violence, and basically said there are a lot of people with blood on their hands, and it starts in the office of the mayor. And then there have been some suggestions that maybe we're going to see some sort of a work slowdown. On the other side, the mayor has basically called those remarks inappropriate and has said he's not going to engage in a war of words at this time out of respect to the families. And the police commissioner, William Bratton, has said that his officers are consummate professionals and basically refuted the notion that we're going to see some sort of retaliatory action by police en masse.
As you mentioned, that has been condemned in some quarters. I think you were talking about words by Patrick Lynch, who is the president of the Patrolmen's Benevolent Association. And this came out almost immediately on Saturday. And just for the record, so that we have it in what is a news story, not to be taking sides or anything, let us hear what Patrick Lynch actually said.
There's blood on many hands tonight. That blood on the hands starts on the steps of City Hall in the office of the mayor.
And as I said, Robert, that has played into as a thread into the outcry and the fallout over what happened on Saturday.
Very much so. And those statements he made came after de Blasio had shown up at the hospital. And there's actually video footage that was posted online showing Mayor Bill de Blasio walking through the hospital and a crowded hallway of police officers turned their back on him, which was sort of a shocking display in many ways of the sentiment of the anger that it seems that many, at least within the union structure, but many in the are feeling towards the mayor.
Now, you mentioned, of course, that that happened on Saturday, a terribly emotional day at a terribly emotional time. But you also are painting a picture for us of what has been ongoing for weeks in the area since, of course, the death of, the death of Eric Garner. And that was July the 17th. And then also the grand jury decision that came in early December. But there has been also an effort in many parts of the city to turn a corner or at least deal with this. The mayor spoke yesterday at a press conference and visibly shaken, he did stress that he supports both nonviolent protesters and the police, trying to bridge that. Here's Mayor de Blasio.
People who are trying to work for a more fair society, anyone who does that nonviolently, I respect that. I respect our men and women in uniform. Those are not contradictory thoughts. We have to keep working for harmony between police and community and for understanding. So I believe we will transcend this. I believe we'll overcome this.
So, Robert Lewis, what is on tap going forward today? And perhaps you could look ahead to the rest of this holiday week.
Sure. So the unions are on complete radio silence at this point. They're basically saying they're not going to be making any statements. They aren't going to be doing anything until after the funerals. The investigation into the actual killing is ongoing. There's about a 2-hour gap in the day of the shooter that is still sort of unknown at this point. And the police department wants to know what happened there, in part to ensure that he wasn't acting or associated with anyone else. They don't believe he was at this point. And also, really just for the family, so they know a full picture of what happened that day. Also, funeral arrangements are continuing. One of the officers, Rafael Ramos, is going to be – the funeral is, I believe, scheduled for Saturday. I think there's a visitation Friday evening. Those details are online. And the other officer, Wenjian Liu, they're working – many of his family is from China, and so they're working on sort of getting his relatives over here, expediting the process so they can schedule his funeral as well.
All right. Thank you very much. Robert Lewis is a reporter for WNYC, and he spoke with us from New York City. And joining us now also from New York is Eugene O'Donnell. He's a lecturer at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice. He's a former police officer with the New York City Police Department. And in December of 2013, just a year ago, he was named a member of then-Mayor-elect Bill de Blasio's Public Safety Transition Committee. Welcome to On Point, Eugene O'Donnell.
Hi, Jackie.
So a very dramatic week for the city of New York, for the mayor's office, for the New York City Police Department. Where do things go from here, Eugene O'Donnell? You've sort of looked at all sides of this.
Well, it's a time to grieve for the city, but honestly and bluntly, now or soon, we're going to have to start speaking truth to nonsense that's been uttered over the last 4 months and maybe even over the last year. My police department in this city, a great police department, a restrained police department, a diverse police department, was called the KKK by some people and other vile and outrageous things. And by, beyond New York, police departments, we have 18,000 in the country, great departments. They regularly get called on by NYPD, towns and villages, sheriffs and troopers, federal law enforcement, great people who come and help our city all the time. They'll be here this week morning. This loss, people from around the world in the law enforcement community are going to come here. But the truth here is that sometimes when absurdities are uttered and re-uttered again, it causes damage. And we have too many people talking about police work at this point that really don't know what the police do, have no recognition of the realities they work under, and that's going to have to be straightened out because it does have a cost when untruths and dissembling and disconnection from reality becomes the center of the conversation.
Well, I think that many people are going to say that it's a really complicated conversation, as I know you are fully aware, and it doesn't come out of nowhere. This has been a dramatic year with encounters between various police departments and citizens. If you could, what would be your formula for trying to ease tensions and build bridges? Because wherever one comes down in this scenario, Eugene O'Donnell, clearly relations need to be better and trust needs to be repaired.
Well, the political establishment has to come out of hiding at all levels, and they have to own law enforcement, and they have to explain what grand juries do, and they have to explain why the police have broad protection, and they have to explain that the police are different than other people, and they have to explain it's we who give the police this broad mandate and give them the powers they give them. And in the absence of that, you want to know why the police are so upset. It's because people who don't know their business are talking about it, and those who are their partners, elected officials, those are the architects. Those who are supposed to be leading are either bystanders or they're in the grandstand taking cheap shots at the police. And that's going on all over the place. And it has to stop. And by the way, it's going on across the partisan divide. In the absence of real solutions for the serious problems the country has, apparently taking two police incidents out of the millions and millions and millions of interactions the police have with citizens, that's where the conversation has been. I understand elected officials much rather would have this discussion about cops than about themselves and their failures. For example, mental health is a tremendous failing, as we saw on display in Brooklyn. And there are, of course, needs for criminal justice reform, but the leaders have to stop blaming patrolmen. That has to stop.
This is On Point. I'm Jackie Leiden, in for Tom Ashbrook. And we're talking about the assassination of two police officers in New York and how it changes the conversation on race and policing. You can join the conversation. Can you trace the fault lines that led to the deaths of these two police officers? And we're speaking now with Eugene O'Donnell. He's a lecturer at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice and a former police officer with the New York City Police Department. Thanks for being with us, Eugene O'Donnell.
Thanks again.
We were talking just before the break, and you were talking about, as you put it, a lot of nonsense in terms of speech and perhaps even the incitement over the last year. And you said that this had that this, if I'm not putting words in your mouth, had culminated in the deaths of these two officers?
You're putting words in my mouth.
All right, then take them out.
It clearly has not been helpful in the overall conversation.
All right. I would also like to say we are talking about two incidents, and I would also just put into this conversation that there have been others. Beaver Creek, Ohio, a death in August, Dontre Hamilton, a death in Milwaukee, Cleveland, Ferguson, of course. So it has been a year of conflict and dramatic shootings that have left a lot of communities deeply unsettled. And I'm just wondering, you have been an officer trainer. Where do you come in at this point on trying to heal divisions which are obviously occurring?
Again, it's going to require truth be spoken, and nobody gets the truth more than communities that need the police. And the largest issue in most American big cities is the police are not engaged. The police, you've got police departments that are employment agencies. The cops drive around and get there late and don't actively engage. And now somebody has this notion that by putting cameras on the police, that's going to make them more willing to engage. I would seriously doubt that. So we need to really have this kind of, this is an adversarial job. It's done in our name. We keep passing statutes. Multi-ethnic legislatures keep telling the cops to do more and more. And they are people that use force. It makes them different. When a cop begins his tour, he could end his tour indicted, because every time they put their hands on somebody, they have to justify that. And so they are agents of coercion. They carry weapons. When you talk about a situation like Eric Garner, other than could you have continued to talk to the guy, which is possible, I've yet to hear any non-police person propose a fast and easy solution to a situation where somebody won't acquiesce to arrest. Now, the police should say this because we know the business, but it's outrageous that elected officials won't say this. It's outrageous, the architects of this system. Every single law the police operate under, every single protection the police have, is given to them by the lawmakers. And reigning in, and somebody like Attorney General Holder is a police chief. He runs the FBI. If the FBI tells you to drop a weapon, you should do that. The law enforcement community, attorney generals, they should step up. District attorneys should step up and stop acting like they don't know the system. The system's brutal. There's problems in the system. There's obviously racial issues in the system all over the place. Where's the leadership to fix it? And while we're on the topic of where's the leadership to fix it, the idea of, like, prisons being a terrible thing, yes, prisons are a terrible thing, but the kid who killed these cops and shot that woman needed to be incapacitated, whether that was psychiatrically or in criminal justice confinement. So we have to have a centered discussion, not a ideological discussion, and not an absurd discussion, which has been a lot of this. And we
All
can
right.
also talk, by the way, about militarization, which became a very bizarre discussion this summer also, and turned out to be much ado about very little, actually, if you push into it.
Well, I have the rest of the show to do that, and I think we will be doing that. But let's just speak to your point about where is the leadership when these things happen. We have seen a great deal of New York Police Commissioner Bill Bratton. Yesterday he spoke on the Today Show. He said the city is in a change moment.
The idea is to take out of this crisis, find opportunity to move it forward. And I think that can happen. That's why I came back into the department a year ago. And we will seize on this tragedy. We'll seize on all of these issues and we'll move forward.
So, Eugene O'Donnell, is that the kind of leadership and front and center that you're talking about?
The president led. He picked Chief Ramsey, who is a great man. Chief Bratton is the best chief in America, right up there at the top with Chief Ramsey. They know policing. They don't pander to people. They support the police. They understand from the ground up what the police do. And if you go into communities, the last thing they want to do is be pandered to by politicians who, by the way, will never be as popular as police officers. One of the most esteemed professions in the country, invariably, where elected officials are not nearly there. So we need them to get into this and them to own this. One of the solutions, obviously, is the police are tasked with too many things and trying to micromanage adversarial interactions. The best way to do it is to have fewer of them. But
All right.
that requires elected officials to look people in the eye and say, we're going to start repealing some laws. We're going to start cutting back on enforcement. And that might not also go over that well with the public.
Let's hear from the public. Michael is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Welcome to On Point, Michael.
Hi, Jackie. It's Michael here. And Mr. O'Donnell, I certainly hear what you're saying, and we all understand the need for police in the society and respect the police. But there's also a fundamental problem that you're not really acknowledging, and that is that it's important, it's essential for the police to adhere to the highest standards in terms of obeying the law. And when you have obvious situations where police are looking the other way, appreciate you got to work with each other every day, it's hard to enforce the law against your colleagues in the organization. But when you have the police who are looking the other way when illegal activity happens, that destroys the credibility of the organization in front of all of the populace. You know, you're very adversarial with respect to the politicians, but ultimately the politicians represent the people, the police work for the people, and that's the thing that seems to get lost in, at least in the perception when we hear the way that you speak, but you're very adversarial vis-a-vis the people that you need to serve.
Not the people, sir. Not the people. They're elected officials who should step up. So and that I get the point. There's no arguing the point. There are some cases in which the police absolutely support each other when they shouldn't, but I think that also happens in other professions as well.
All right. Thank you for that comment, Michael. Let's bring in two other guests. We're joined now by Carmen Perez. She's the executive director for the Gathering for Justice, which created the Justice League of New York City Task Force, a coalition of social and criminal justice advocates, which has helped organize the protests in New York City. Welcome to On Point, Carmen.
Hi, Jackie.
Thanks for being here. And also Dante Berry. Dante is director of the Million Hoodies Movement for Justice, which was established in 2012 in response to the killing of Trayvon Martin. And the group now has 50,000 members.
Hi, Jackie.
Thank you for being with us, Dante. So we've been talking with Eugene O'Donnell, who's a lecturer at John Jay College of Criminal Justice. Let me ask both of you where you come into this complicated, tense situation now in New York City. The mayor has asked for a suspension of protests for the rest of the week. There are still details to be revealed about exactly what happened Saturday. No one knows quite when that will happen. There is a mental health element to this picture. So, Carmen, let's begin with you.
Well, first of all, we are deeply saddened by the murder of the two officers, and our condolences go out to the families. And for us, you know, we've been putting together actions to unite the community in response to the non-indictment of the verdict for the officer responsible for the death of Eric Gardner. And for the majority of everything has been really peaceful. Our initiative is grounded in nonviolence. And so we came together this past weekend for a moment to mourn as a community. And we had a silent march, a candlelight vigil, honoring the lives that have been lost to police brutality, as well as the two officers, because we believe that any act of violence is a crime against humanity. And so we've been very intentional about the way in which we have moved to bring people together, as well as putting together demands for our mayor, for our governor, for our attorney general.
All right. Okay, thank you. And let me just make sure that Dante gets a moment in here too, Carmen. We'll be coming back to you. Dante, could you tell us where you are now in this dynamic?
Yes, so we've immediately, once we found out about the tragic murders of the police officers, we initially sent out a statement condoning all violence. We stand against any form of violence with any form of community. So in every regard, the things that we've been protesting, a lot of the protests across the country in New York City are largely due to a protest against violence. It's important to lift that up because we as a group feel that violence and against any community is a threat towards humanity, right? I think when we also look at some of the comments that have been made, different aspects, we want to continue to lift up that Black lives do matter. I think we can still have a conversation, express our sympathies around the murders of the two officers, but also continue to have a conversation about why Black lives do need to be brought into this conversation when it looks like justice doesn't always get pursued in those lights. So we actually worked with a number of groups yesterday to put out a statement to recognize that our voices will not still be silenced. We want to keep saying that although that we do want to respect and honor the deaths of the two police officers, we still have work to do. And this is still a racial justice movement that still is pursuing justice for Black people.
What do either of you have to say in response to the mayor's suggestion that protests should be suspended this week? Will you? Carmen?
Sorry about that. We're looking at each other like, go ahead. For us, prior to the mayor releasing that statement, Justice League and several other groups had discussed really trying to come back into the community and provide something to the community. And so we respect the mourning process of the families. We also respect the mourning process of, not only the families of the officers, but also those of Eric Gardner, Ramarlee Graham, those that have lost their lives to police brutality, and those that are not going to be spending time with their loved ones this holiday season. And so for Justice League, what we're planning on doing is we had been planning a toy drive for quite some time to go out into the communities that are impacted by violence and provide toys to the children. But also having deeper conversations of what reform looks like, continuing to do the work. And so I think protest is one strategy, one tactic to the overall goal. We're not just protesting. We're also convening meetings about how we're going to reform the criminal justice system, reform police brutality. And so that's, I think, where we are right now.
All right. Thank you. Let's take another call here. Joe is calling from Melbourne, Florida. Welcome to On Point, Joe.
Hi, Jackie. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate all the comments and the consultants you have there. I've spent time addressing officers, candidates to go out in the street as a mental health support person. I get frustrated that this is put into a racial box as opposed to really police work in general. I read Patrick Lynch's comments. I was ashamed to be an Irishman and someone who supports law enforcement.
You're talking about the head of the Police Benevolent Association.
The PBA in New York, mm-hmm. and I have a great deal of respect for the PBA. It's one of the strongest unions here in Florida. But while the rest of the country expressed sadness and support, Lynch used the moment to blame a mayor who had the, quote, audacity to acknowledge the truth. And that among New York Police Department and other departments around the country, there's an element that use their uniform is licensed to demean, harass, and sometimes physically harm citizens for little more than petty offenses. If Lynch and other union heads really want to point the blame, they should point to the 10% of officers who provoke the hate that motivates individuals like Brimsley and others to harm officers who in many cases are well respected in their communities. Miami lost a community service officer some years ago sitting in his car writing a report. They're the same kind of senseless violence. Someone walked up. But someone within the law enforcement has to have the common sense to say, we need to look inside. We've got a percentage of officers who set the tone for the hate and for the paranoia that exists among its citizens.
Okay, Joe, thank you.
That's not a racial issue.
All right. Thank you very much for that comment. I want to give time to Eugene O'Donnell to respond to it. What about that element, that strain, who knows, 10%, whatever percentage, that often can get other officers into trouble, whether it's rhetoric or something more violent?
There's no question there's an element of people that should be not in the police business. But since we're talking about Patrick Lynch, this is a president of the union who was standing in a hospital where his entire membership was metaphorically killed. Okay, they were selected because they were wearing police uniforms. So he might be a little bit emotional, and he certainly might be a little bit emotional about a summer in which people said things like, let's get rid of the presumption of innocence for the police. Let's just indict the police to indict the police. Let's misrepresent what the grand jury does. Grand juries in this state, New York, regularly don't indict civilians who claim self-defense. The distortions that went on there, and I believe that labor rights are civil rights, and I believe that what we saw elected officials and others, lawyers, people who should know better, basically quashing, destroying the police presumption of innocence on Staten Island and maligning the grand jury ex post facto. I put cases into the grand jury on a regular basis in Brooklyn and Queens, and any prosecutor in New York will tell you, not only do people claiming self-defense get no true bill, not indicted, young people with guns and drugs, it happens all the time. Where were the elected officials to come and say that rather than pandering?
So you're talking about the need for, it almost sounds like the need for some kind of playbook, if you will, at these moments of crisis, because Lynch, too, is a leader just as the mayor is.
The playbook has to be based on truth and reality. It can't be based on fantasy. The caller referenced the trivial offense. You couldn't come up with a more trivial offense. Whenever you see the police somewhere, they've been ordered to be there. In Staten Island, New York, they were ordered to arrest a man for selling loose cigarettes. That's a disgrace. That's a leadership disgrace.
All right, okay? We will continue.
But it was based on the community asking for it to happen. So
all
this
right.
is where the rub comes up.
This is On Point. I'm Jackie Leiden in for Tom Ashbrook. And we're talking about the aftermath of the shooting deaths of two police officers this weekend in New York, followed by the suicide of the gunman and the big national conversation going on about race, the police, and trust. You can join the conversation. What's your message to the police, to the protesters, to Mayor Bill de Blasio? We've been speaking with Eugene O'Donnell, lecturer at John Jay College of Criminal Justice and a former police officer with the New York City Police Department, and with with Carmen Perez, executive director of the Gathering for Justice, which created the Justice League NYC Task Force, a coalition of social and criminal justice advocates that helped organize protests in New York, and with Dante Barry, director of the Million Hoodies Movement for Justice, a group that now has 50,000 members. I'd like to begin with a comment here by the daughter of Eric Garner, who died after police used a chokehold on him in August. This is Emerald Garner, who came to the police memorial on Monday, yesterday, to support the families of the police officers.
I just wanted to, you know, come out here and let the families know that, you know, I too understand what's going on. You know, I lost my dad before the holiday season, so I know how they feel. I know that this is a great loss. It's going to be hard this holiday season, but we're just, you know, asking everybody to stay strong, stay with us.
And let's go now to your calls. Tom is calling from Detroit, Michigan. Welcome to On Point, Tom.
Hi, Jackie.
Hi.
You know, I think this needs to happen. There needs to be a, hopefully cooler heads will prevail in this whole mess, not just in New York, but, you know, across the country. I hope that people, they need to come to a table of commonality, and on both sides, as far as the community goes and on the side of the police, you know, they need to work together to gain back some of the trust that was lost on both sides. And I agree with the mayor that there has to be harmony between the community and the police, because we can ill afford to have, you know, this distrust on both sides. Because, you know, as crazy as things are, I mean, can you imagine what, how things, much more crazier things would be if, you know, there's this distrust and, you know, things aren't going right. I mean, I'm one of those people who believe that, you know, I'm an eternal optimist, and hopefully things will get right. But there has to be, you know, this trust gained back from what was lost, and, you know, especially about this racial thing. I mean, it's like a sore that's been picked at, and it's never healed. And, I mean, it's going to be a long time before we can get over this racial thing, if we ever get over it. But we've got to come to a table of commonality, sit down and talk to one another, not at one another, and get things resolved.
All right. Thank you so much for that call from Detroit, Tom. Carmen and Dante, let's bring you back in here. We've been talking about, with Eugene O'Donnell, the leadership needing to be more front and center, more need, as you just heard from Tom, for commonality. What else or how does this happen now? And also where? Because, of course, today we're focusing on New York, but scarcely the only community that's been riven by violence, mistrust, suspicion, and grand juries hearing these kinds of cases. So what now, where? Dante.
I'll say there's two things that need to happen. We believe that continuing the national dialogue on the need for racial justice and police accountability is crucial. It's really important at this moment that we still continue the push forward on this as we see more prevalent cases of black and brown bodies being killed or harassed by police. Particularly, there was an incident in Wisconsin the other day. So we're going to keep seeing this over and over, and it's going to be even more pressure to hold police accountable for these incidents. But secondly, particularly in New York City, we want to call on elected officials and other leaders to reject attempts by police unions and others to link the killing of police officers to national nonviolent movement for racial justice and police accountability. I think what we heard from different folks in New York City have been further providing tension to the issue. And I think that when we look at everything that's going on, we also forget that initially this individual also attempted domestic violence on his partner in Baltimore.
You're talking about Ismael Brinsley last week.
Yes. So we also need to keep focusing on this, of like the issue of domestic violence, but also take a step back and realize that this has implications on people's mental health. Particularly as a person of color, you are going through different types of traumatic experiences when you're profiled or harassed, tons of different things in addition to other things in living your daily life. So I think we also need to like think more concretely about how we are redistributing resources into mental health services for particularly communities of color as well.
Would you agree with the beefing up mental health services, Eugene O'Donnell?
Of course. And I'm going to have to leave shortly. But if I could just say, 2013, the NYPD in the city had a 70% approval rating. They really don't. Most there's definitely police people that shouldn't be in the business. You can understand, though, they don't feel they need a lecture from a lot of people who actually don't understand that they're frontline justice workers, they're civil rights workers, they physically put themselves in harm's way. They do more in good in this city in 24 hours. And this idea that people that don't know what they do continue to bang on about abuses in a department which I believe now is 60% minority. So we need to have a recentered, sensible conversation, and absolutely should be said by anybody who is talking about what the police do, we need to have criminal justice reform. Nobody should feel uncomfortable about protesting or pushing for police reform. That's absolutely necessary.
Well, let me just push back a little bit with you there, please, Eugene O'Donnell, because on the one hand, you're saying bang on about abuses, which, you know, if I'm looking at what has happened in my community, I might take exception to that language. And on the other hand, you're saying we need to recognize the social worker job that police are challenged to do, the justice issues that police are challenged to do, the civil obedience role that police are challenged to do. How do we look at rhetoric here that would be inclusive?
Well, we need to look, for example, at videos of the police in this city using restraint. It's one of the most restrained departments in the world, certainly in the country. You have two incidents, Garner and the one in Ferguson, that are different incidents. They need to be dissected. They need not to be taken together. And it is simply, and the equivalence arguments about those events is not helpful in this conversation. So making those two events equal and making those events equal with an ambush of police officers is not helpful. And that has been going on out in the blogosphere and elsewhere.
All right. Thank you so much for being with us. I know that you have to go. We've been speaking with Eugene O'Donnell, who lectures at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice and was on the streets as an officer with the New York City Police Department. Thanks for being with us.
Good day.
And now let's go to another call. Sean is calling from Thibodaux, Louisiana. Thank you for calling, Sean.
Yeah, how are y'all today?
Just fine, thanks.
I had a question for the Mr. O'Donnell, but he got off quickly. I can understand when they say don't resist. Okay, don't resist. But just imagine you have a young man that the police is after, and he takes off running, okay? Now, he sees no way out, so he stops, puts his hands up. The cops have the guns out on him. Okay, lay down, put your arms out. Why do they still brutalize him once he's cooperated with him by running, dive down on him, put his knee in his back, put their knee in his neck and stuff like that? Why do they still brutalize him once he's given up?
All right, thank
you. I really can't comprehend that.
Well, let's put that question, Mr. O'Donnell had to go. Thanks, Sean. Let's put that question to Dante Berry, because I'm curious, Dante, in the establishment of your Million Hoodies movement for justice, has the question of what to do for you have mentioned people of color, what to do at that moment when there is a confrontation between a civilian and the cops, what to do?
It's a great question. And it's something that a lot of people of color, particularly black folks, experience every single day or are taught or aware of taught by their parents. Something that my family has taught me when I was younger was three things. One, you're going to put your hands in the air. So that they don't suspect you have a gun. You're going to take your hands out of your pocket so they don't suspect that you're carrying anything. And you're going to make sure that you always have an ID with you so they don't suspect you of someone else. And that's some of the key things that got me alive or kept me alive, really actually up until Mike Brown. The mechanism of having your hands up in the air is a survival mechanism. It's a tool to say, hey, I am innocent. I don't have anything. And this is me like waving a white flag. And so when we look at all of this and we see the reactions of folks across the country who really are connected to that survival mechanism, this is really a sense of frustration and a sense of confusion because they don't know how they're going to survive after this. Mm-hmm. And we see this more and more and more. And I think like what he the guest before just mentioned was that like, yes, there's incidents that are happening in Ferguson. There's incidents in here. But this is happening every 28 hours. A black person is killed by a police officer every 28 hours. John Crawford had a video. He was shot in a Walmart in an open carry state in Ohio. Tamir Rice, who was 12 years old, who was shot in a drive-by. Tanisha Anderson, who was also in Cleveland, who has a mental instability, was also shot and killed. This is happening in all parts of the country. And we are seeing it in video. We're seeing this in photos. So this is not an isolated incident. They're systemic. And we've gone through a series of misaccountability cases, even stemming from Rodney King. Mm-hmm. And so when we look at this, this is not something that randomly happened. This is happening every single day. And there's tons of more names that we actually might not never know because this is happening every 28 hours.
All right. And just to add to that, one of the things that happens in our communities is that as people of color, we're constantly being trained in de-escalation skills. We're constantly being trained to diffuse ourselves, right? This is what you need to do. You need to prepare yourself as a black man, as a Latino man, to step out of your house and potentially be stopped by police. And so I think what Dante says is very important, even in his own personal life, being told by his parents that, you know, you need to put your hands up, you need to make sure you take your hands out, and you need to cooperate and show that you are who you are. And even that sometimes doesn't work.
I was just curious, how old you are, Dante?
I'm 26.
All right. Okay. Let's try, Carmen, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I'd like to get a couple more callers in here. John is calling from, I think it's pronounced New Braunfels, Texas. Welcome to On Point, John.
Hi, Jackie. How are you doing?
Fine, thanks.
I was just calling to weigh in from a different standpoint as everybody else. I'm a Native American. I am Cherokee Indian. I've been confused with a Latino American. I have been pulled over by the police. I was arrested. They thought I was somebody else. I showed them my driver's license. I was still arrested. I spent 3 hours in a holding cell when I was released. I told the cop, you know, hey, thank you. And he asked me what for. He was surprised. And I told him, you were just doing your job. You know, and I think that's important that everybody just needs to remember also that we're not paying these guys much to go out here and enforce these laws out on the streets. And they're having to face stuff where they're getting shot. They're getting cut. You know, they're in these dire situations where they have to make a quick pro quo, as you might say, to do what they have to do so they can say, you know, they can kiss their kids goodnight.
Okay.
When they get home.
All right. Thank you very much for that call, John. We appreciate that point. Carmen, do you want to react to that? We just have a few minutes left.
I think that's, something that gets brought up constantly, and what we need to understand is at this moment there's an opportunity for dialogue, for conversation. The gentleman earlier, Eugene, had said that a lot of people don't know what the officers do, and so, you know, come into the community, come and have a community conversation, an open forum to have a conversation of what community policing is. In regards to the gentleman that just talked about his experience. I mean, that's systemic. We need to reform the system if we think it's okay to be pulled over based on the color of our skin. And so at this moment in time where we are right now in New York or whether it's in Ferguson, there's an opportunity for us to come together and have a conversation of what reform looks like.
Dante, a lot of the focus, you mentioned the frequency of incidents, but a lot of the focus has been on the shootings and the victims. Now we have the shootings of police. Does it change this conversation somehow for groups like yours, for the Million Hoodies Movement for Justice?
I don't think so. It's not mutually exclusive for As for New Yorkers specifically, to share our condolences with the families of Officer Liu and Ramos while continuing to push for a call for racial justice. They're not exclusive, and we can do this, and I think we tend to get into this assumption that we can only think about one thing at a time. And we can't. And I personally, as a black person, I don't have the privilege to think about one thing at a time. I have to think about myself as a black person and how that has to impact my life from going to work to going to school to eating, all these different things, right? So we still need to keep pushing forward in every light. And what we've been doing is working with other groups to really think about how are we building effective police reform. This is about having effective community policing of tactics.
Well, we could fill another show with this easily, I'm sure, but we're so glad that you could be with us today. Dante Berry, director of Million Hoodies Movement for Justice, thanks for joining us. And Carmen Perez, executive director of the Gathering for Justice, thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we were also joined in this part of the show by Eugene O'Donnell at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice, a former NYPD officer. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org, or follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Coming up tomorrow, gratitude isn't just good manners. Researchers are discovering it's a key to happiness. I'm Jackie Leiden, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.